Hi, welcome to my new podcast, Crate Combos and Metal Zones. I figured in a way to release more regular content than I have been. It's not hard to post more regular than once every 3 months. But I thought to do that, I would post a podcast. And I thought, well, you can't really do a podcast about just sitting and talking about stuff. That market is very saturated. So I figured, what am I passionate about and enjoying these days? And I thought, music, and specifically rock music. And specifically, I like listening to records every once in a while, just listening front to back the way the artist intended. And I thought, what a cool way, with all the show rewind podcasts, like the Always Sunny podcast, the Ned's Declassified podcast, the Wizards of Waverly Place podcast, all these podcasts talking about old episodes of TV shows, why don't I do one from a non-music theory, no Rick Beato type stuff, where I just sit and I talk about records from an outsider's perspective and just talk about my favorite records. Today we're going to be talking about Metallica's Black Album, arguably one of my favorite records of all time. It's not my favorite Metallica record, but it's certainly in the top three, I would say. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about that. But before that, let's talk about the news. Trump! Just kidding, we're not talking about regular news, we're talking about rock news. This is a rock podcast, damn it. So every episode, I'm not going to be doing this every week. It's probably going to end up being every 2 weeks. But every episode, I'm going to pick a piece of news and we're going to talk about it. And this week, I decided to talk about this article, how Corey Taylor came to enjoy and appreciate Metallica's Saint Anger. Kind of fitting since we're talking about the Black Album. Let's talk about an album that happened 10 years later. So first of all, I haven't read this article yet, but my thoughts on Saint Anger, it's not as bad as everyone thinks. Is it a bad record? Yes, it's not great. But there's good moments on it, and I kind of screened this article, and I think Corey Taylor kind of says it as well. So let's get into it. Corey Taylor thinks Metallica's Saint Anger has some good grooves on it that are underappreciated, including the album's title track. I agree with that. There's some cool riffs, like in Invisible Kid. It has a part where it goes, that's a really fucking cool riff. That's a really cool riff. But how did the Slipknot singer come to appreciate and defend the oft-reviled 2003 album, the frequently heated making of which was documented in Metallica's Some Kind of Monster? Fuck! He had a little help from a Stone Sour bandmate. That's what Taylor explained in part of an interview that emerged on Wednesday, August 23rd. Indeed, 20 years after the release of Saint Anger, Corey Taylor has admitted that the lengths he went to fully appreciate the Metallica LP after Stone Sour guitarist Josh Rand gave him an opportunity to dive deeper into the songs on it, and Saint Anger came out during a trying time for the Slipknot singer. When it came out, I was a raging alcoholic prick. When I listened to it, the mix kind of threw me off, and I wasn't paying attention to the songs. I was kind of following the herd on that. Yeah, a lot of people did that. Also, I should mention, the first song I listened to before I got into Metallica, and for those who don't know, Metallica is my favorite band. I have 7 of the vinyls up on this shelf up here. So I kind of like Metallica a little bit. Frantic was the first song I heard before I got into, dove headfirst into Metallica. And the mix didn't really bother me because in my brain it was like, oh, this is metal. But then I went back and I listened to like the Black Album and Saint Anger and stuff like, or not Saint Anger, and Master of Puppets and stuff like that. Now it's like retroactively, it's like, yeah, that's kind of a weird sore spot being Saint Anger. But it's like, it's not terrible. It's kind of a product of the times, really. But yeah, anyway. He adds, Josh Rand, who was a massive Metallica fan, he got the deluxe version that had the companion DVD where they played the whole album in their rehearsal space, and watching that, I could hone in on the songs. I wasn't stuck on how it sounded. I could listen to what's going on, and it immediately gave me a better appreciation. Taylor continues, now when I listen to it, I think a lot of the stuff's really good, and there are some good grooves on it that I think are really underappreciated. The rocker concludes, I mean, the title track is a motherfucker, you know?
I agree, Mr. Corey Taylor. Want to take software failure on tour one day?
That'd be a hell of a show. We would break out with a method actor. Also, the theme song for the show. Then we break out with that, and people are like, boo! Get out, Slipknot. I want to hear Psychosocial. That'd be a funny tour. Corey, call me up, baby. Anyway, that concludes the news. All right, now on to the meat and potatoes, the reason you clicked on this video. We're talking about Metallica's Black Album today. Like I said, probably one of my more favorite Metallica records. It's probably top three, the other two being Ride of Lightning and Master of Puppets. But in my opinion, before listening back to it, which I'm going to do here, I'm going to give my live reaction. This album is amazing. It's absolutely one of their best records. There's no song that kind of drags. It's still sounds fairly modern for being 30 years old. It's a great record. But for those who don't know, I'm going to give a little bit of a history from Wikipedia. I did a lot of research. Arguably, I don't really need to do that much research. I know everything about Metallica you'd want to know. Metallica, commonly known as the Black Album. And if you call this album Metallica, it kind of bothers me a little bit. So I know what the comments are going to be filled with now. Metallica, commonly known as the Black Album, is the fifth studio album by American heavy metal band Metallica. It was released on August 12, 1991 by Elektra Records. Recording sessions took place at One-on-One Studios in Los Angeles over an eight-month period that frequently found Metallica at odds with their new producer, Bob Rock. It was painted that way, but I don't really think so. It was like the hazing that Jason, their bass player, went through. It was more like, can this guy hang? Is this guy worthy of producing us? It was just more like giving him shit than anything, given the fact that they went on to produce four more records with him.
Bob used to be a woman.
Look at tough guy.
Nice hair color.
Did your makeup?
Bob Rock looked like 10 years ago. Notice only one chin.
Blue. It looks like
how come
clip on a great
how come this guy's on
denim.
The side by himself? Was he like the leader or the?
Yeah, he's the leader.
He told you what to do? That girly looking guy?
The album marked a change in the band's music from the thrash metal style of their previous four records and a slower, heavier, more refined sound. I would argue that the thrash metal sound kind of went away after Master, because then once it got to Justice, that was a lot more proggy. Sure, there was fast parts and there were songs like Short of Straw, but I think it more so went away on after Master. I don't know, I wasn't around. Metallica promoted the Black Album with a series of tours. They also released five singles to promote the album: Enter Sandman, Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters, Wherever I May Roam, and Sad But True, all of which have been considered among the band's best known songs. All very good. The song Don't Tread on Me was issued to rock radio shortly after the album's release, but did not receive a commercial single release. Also, technically, the title track, because in the making of outtakes that they released with the 30-year box set a couple years ago, there's a bit where James is like introducing the song, and he's like, here's the title track for the untitled album. And I just found that really funny. But yeah, anyway, the Black Album received widespread critical acclaim and became the band's best-selling album by far. It debuted at number one in 10 countries and spent four consecutive weeks on the Billboard Top 200, making it Metallica's first album to top the charts. With over 3 million copies sold worldwide, Metallica is one of the best-selling albums worldwide. Sorry, I meant the Black Album. It's one of the best-selling albums worldwide, and also one of the best-selling albums in the United States since Nielsen SoundScan tracking. Hey, you hover over that and you see Metallica. That's pretty rad. The album was certified 16 times platinum, whoa, by RIA. In 2012, has sold over 16 million copies in the United States, and being the first album in the SoundScan era to do so. Good job, boys! Metallica played the Black Album in its entirety during the 2012 European Black Album Tour. In 2020, the album was ranked 235 on Rolling Stone's the greatest 500 greatest albums of all time list. In December 2019, Metallica became the fourth release in American history to enter the 550-week milestone on the Billboard 200. It also became the largest charting single in history, only behind Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, to spend 550 weeks on the album charts. If that doesn't prove how fucking good this record is, I don't know what is. What we're going to do, what the plan is, I'm going to pull up the album. Each episode I'm going to do this, and I'm going to give kind of a live reaction, because I've noticed this when I've done this on stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/darkwolfshow. Follow me there, subscribe, use Twitch Prime. What was I saying? I've noticed with streams and stuff, where I talked about like when 72 Seasons came out for the new Metallica record, talking about it retroactively after I've listened to it, I'm just not good at it, because I'm not a music reviewer. I'm no Rick Beato. I can't get my thoughts in order and talk about something after the fact. I'm not good at that. So I feel this is the best way to do it for me, is to listen song by song and then review the song afterwards. And then at the end, I'll give my whole thoughts. So yeah, I just thought of something. I shouldn't have name dropped Rick Beato talking about records. I should have name dropped Anthony Fantano. This isn't going to be nearly as good as Anthony Fantano, but I got a flannel. Anyway, let's get into it. The first song, Enter Sandman. Everyone likes this song. Lord, my soul to cake. Ha, he's hungry. That's a reference to the documentary. So that was Enter Sandman. I don't know why I introduced like a radio thing. You didn't just hear it, but because I don't want to get sued. Ha, classic Metallica joke. So Enter Sandman, that song, classic, instant classic, some might say. It's kind of weird listening to the album version, because I'm so used to listening to the live version, because I have a Metallica playlist where it's just Metallica songs, but it's mostly deep cuts, so I don't have songs like Sandman or Sad But True or Master of Puppets in there, just because it's like, well, I've listened to those songs to death. I just want to hear the deep cuts. I want to hear Leper Messiah. I want to hear All Nightmare Long. I want to hear these deep cuts. So it's like, I want to hear that stuff, not the stuff I can hear 100 times on the radio, you know? But listening to it again, it made me kind of notice a couple things. First of all, I didn't realize that after the last chorus, there was still a minute of stuff. And I didn't realize that the Off to Never Neverland at the end, the Off to Never Neverland, take my... I didn't realize that James's vocal was kind of almost vocodery. I didn't realize that part. And also, I forget that there's like a fade out on this song, because like in the live version, they just play it, and I think it goes into the... And then they hang. But yeah, it's a great song. If you've never heard it, you're living under a rock. Did you even watch Stranger Things? Because I watched Stranger Things, but I was already into Metallica. Next song is Sad But True. For a long time, this was my favorite Metallica song. So let's go. It was early. Well, from the right ear, the backing vocals went from the right ear to the left ear to the center. That was fucking rad. Fuck yeah, I love that song. That might be one of my favorites of all time by Metallica. but also probably my favorite on the record. I don't remember what I put on my Metallica tier list. I did on stream, twitch.tv/StarCoolShow. That's the second one. But no, I don't know which one I put as my favorite on there. It's probably this one. Hold on, I can check, actually. Aw, damn it. That's right, I went through and I deleted files recently. Anyway, that song's great. It's the first song where they ever downtuned, besides Thing That Should Not Be. In that one, they tuned to D sharp, which is D standard, but a half, but a semitone lower, I believe. Hey, this is Trevor from the future. I'm a fucking idiot. I meant to say C sharp. D sharp is only a half step down. What I'm talking about is C sharp. So yeah, nothing new. I'm just a fucking idiot. And this is just in D, so the on a bass, I don't know what it is for a guitar, but for a bass, it, instead of E, A, D, G, it's D, G, C, F is the tunings from the largest string to the thinnest string. But yeah, but also I think for this, Jason used a 5-string, so I think the top string would be an A. I think, because I think normally the top string of a 5-string is a B, I think. I don't know. I use a 4-string. I've only ever used 4-strings. I've never used a 5-string. This song is rad. As I mentioned before, this is, I believe, was my favorite Metallica song for a long time, and that holds true. But because of that, listening to this song, and specifically listening to the album version, it takes me back to when I first got into Metallica, like, spring of 2019. And music has this great quality when you ingest a song or an album a lot. Just it brings you back to a certain time where you listen to it. Like if I listen to Nirvana, it takes me back to October of 2021. I don't know why. I just was listening to Nirvana a lot back then. Just listening to this takes me back to that time, and because of that, it's like, man, I remember how I was feeling, what that time felt like, and just kind of what my room looked like back then and what I was doing and just the energy of that time. And it's just like, whoa. But yeah, as I mentioned, for the kind of the bridge part of where the backing vocal goes from the right ear to the left ear to the center is rad. That's shit like that is awesome to me, and that's why I have headphones in. On to the next song, Holier Than Thou. A much different pace from Sandman and Sabbath True, but still a good song nonetheless. I love that it just goes down to the bass here. And it builds. Other two guitars come in. Bad. That song is very good. It's a nice kind of reminder, like, hey, we're still Metallica. We still do fast songs. Don't be scared by the other two. But yeah, that song is very... They've been playing it a lot live recently. They played it on Kimmel when they did a week on Kimmel. And then they played it a fair bit on this tour. But yeah, Holier Than Thou, this is a good song. This is the song that Bob Rock thought should be the lead single, which would have been a huge fucking mistake if it wasn't Sandman. If Sandman wasn't the single, Metallica may not be able to afford doing the M72 tour. Let's just be honest. But yeah, anyway, this song is rad. I like that part where it goes down to the bass. Also in the beginning, there's a little bit of a Bon Jovi type thing going on, which makes sense a little bit because Bob Rock also produced Bon Jovi. But with the talk box, the wow. But it's super kind of buried in the mix. And if you didn't think about it, you probably wouldn't hear it. But yeah, it's a cool part and it fits. But it's, I don't know. You could probably confuse it with a wah too, which wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for Metallica, which is funny. Because earlier when I mentioned Rick Beato. If you don't know who Rick Beato is, by the way, and you're a fan of music, absolutely watch his videos. They are fucking great. He's way better at talking about music than I am, because he actually worked in the music industry and everything. I just like listening to it and playing it, but I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Kirk did an interview with Rick Beato, and Kirk talked about his wah, and he's like, it's a extension of my voice. And it's like, people are like, yeah, definitely is. If there's no wah, Kirk doesn't know what to do. There was this video I saw where Kirk was playing and he was stomping his foot, and someone was like, does he not know there's not a wah pedal there? So funny. Anyway, the next song is The Unforgiven, the ballad, number 4 slot, which is the slot for every Metallica ballad. Fade to Black, Sanitarium 1, Unforgiven, Unforgiven 2. Is there a ballad on Load? Gotta go to the fucking Metallica website to figure this one out. Oh, I guess it technically Until It Sleeps. I guess it's in number 4, but it's not super ballady. I guess kind of. It does kind of follow the same structure. It's kind of a light verse and then heavy verse, or a heavy chorus, I should say. So I guess technically, because it's like, I take this pain of mine, tear me up and pull me out. Anyway, on to fucking Unforgiven. They lifted that from somewhere and reversed it, so you didn't know what it was from, that horn at the beginning. Just so you know. I know too much. It's good for the podcast, though, I suppose. The Unforgiven, the classic Metallica ballad. But this song, they actually swapped their regular ballad format. They usually it was, like I mentioned, for Until It Sleeps, that kind of follows this pattern. Is a light verse, heavy chorus. But for this, they've decided to swap that just to kind of turn their ballad format on its head, because it's the heavy verse but the light chorus, which is a cool kind of juxtaposition, because you would think you want to bring up the chorus and have that impact, which they are very good at doing. It's cool when it's like, is this going to build into something more? But then it doesn't. And then it goes back to the verse and it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. And then with the solo for this song, the notorious kind of butting of heads between Kirk and Bob. Jamie, pull that up.
Oh, pull it up, Jamie.
Solo for the Unforgiven came about pretty much through the trial and error and, you know, creative tension.
That's when the best shit comes out, is when there's creative tension. Bobby and I had that. We were working on a song and he came up with a riff. And he was like, this might be too hard for you to play, because he's a guitar player and he's a lot better than I am. He came up with a riff for a song. And I was like, fuck you. Fuck you. Just show me the damn riff and let me fucking try it before you fucking bottleneck the song. And then he showed me and I was like, oh shit, this is hard. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, well, that doesn't mean I don't want to try and fucking learn it, dickhead. And now it's been a week. I'm fucking playing. Fuck you, Bobby, if you're listening to this. I'm kidding. I love you. Anyway. I'm not bitter.
Doesn't need fucking flash.
It's not his style. You know, if he was gonna play something like that, it might take him 6 months.
That's how Bobby felt about me and this that riff I was talking about. And that's how I feel. It felt like Bobby talked about. I didn't like it. I felt fucking attacked. I was like, "Fuck you for fucking undermining me." We had a lot of arguments that day. Not stemming from that, but we had one about Legos and how they're not nerdy. They're fucking nerdy. If Bobby watches this, he's gonna text me about that. What the fuck? But yeah, we had an argument about that, and then we had the argument about him undermining me. And he was like, man, you're testy today. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I just don't like that you're undermining my fucking ability, dickhead. I write the majority of the songs. Fuck you. And granted, yes, it was a hard riff, and it was out of my comfort zone, but I fucking learned it.
It's
It's like crackle boom, da-da-doom-doo, you know, it's fucking... You know what I mean? It's like it should play off what's there. Going up high, it's just like...
What yeah, but if you get, I guess what I'm trying to say, he starts up there and then goes down, and all the shit you said right there is great shit, but I don't see it being any less great if it comes in bar two instead of in bar one.
But what I'm saying is build rather than blow your load, bring everybody down, and then build it up again. I'm just saying let's fucking get guttural and build it to a peak, because that's why there's the strings and all those changes at the end.
Why can't it start here and go like that?
Yeah, that's my school of thought. Grab them and like take them to this other place and then really take them to a higher plateau.
And that's what I like about the solo.
Go ahead. Impress me.
Mm-hmm. God has permission.
But yeah, and then he plays a solo and then it makes it on the record and then it's a fucking hit. So yeah. Yeah, it certainly helps to be challenged with stuff like that. And it kind of it makes you more determined to learn how to play something. In the case of Bobby and I, it makes me be like, okay, I really need to learn this to kind of throw up the middle finger at Bobby and be like, fuck you, too hard for me. But yeah, anyway, the next song is Wherever I May Roam. Yeah. Fuck, that snare sounds like gunshot. That's fucking rad. Such a big snare sound. That's awesome. Wherever I May Roam. That's a good goddamn song. I didn't realize how many fade-outs there are on this album. There's a fade-out in Sandman. There's a fade-out in Unforgiven. And there was one in this song. I didn't realize how many of these songs faded out. But yeah, this song kicks ass. It first of all, it starts with a sitar or an electric sitar. It's supposed to sound like a sitar, but it has the same tuning as similar. It has a similar tuning to a guitar, I believe. But it has extra strings on it that ring out, so it sounds like a sitar. Kirk played one in SNM2 at the beginning of Rome when they did that. And then also, there's a bunch of kind of, I don't want to say random, but there's throughout the song there's a crack sound, and that's I believe a 12 string bass.
Oh, that crack, that was a
that breath,
that's a 6 string bass, right?
12 string bass.
Excuse my arithmetic.
That's something that needs to be addressed.
6 was not nearly heavy enough.
We tried 8 and that wouldn't work, so we went to 12. That sound right there.
Yeah.
12 string of the bass frequency.
It oddly sounds Eastern. Like an Eastern percussion instrument. Yeah. You wouldn't know that was a bass.
Ka-jong!
And the bass is very prominent in this song, I noticed. And all the songs, but primarily it kind of popped out on this one. And I forgot to mention, this is the first one where the bass is super prominent. First album where the bass is super prominent. And with this album, Bob kind of introduced frequencies and stuff like that to make sure that everything can kind of be lifted up, not only by the bass volume, but also in Jason's playing, just kind of maybe playing just straight eighth notes and not playing along with the same riff, which is what he did for Justice, because that's what he was used to with Flotsam and Jetsam, his previous band. Because he wrote a lot of the songs and he wrote them on bass so the guitars would just follow him. Whereas Jason kind of listened more to Lars's kick drum and kind of followed the drums more than the guitars to make them stand out more. All right, next song is the title track from the untitled album, Don't Tread on Me. So be it, Russia. I think that every time I hear this song. Someone hits a dog in the studio. Don't Tread on Me by Metallica from Metallica. Good song. I like that song a lot. I like the way it starts. Do 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 do. And then the riff. I like that riff a lot. But yeah, this song's very good. I like it. Solo's good. And it's relatively short for a Metallica song. It's the third shortest song on this album. It's 4 minutes, which isn't really that short, but for Metallica it is. Given they now have an 11-minute song. Also, I didn't mention that for this album, they kind of intentionally wanted to write shorter songs. Because with Justice, they got to like 8-9 minutes. It was like the average song length. And I think the longest one is like a little over 9 minutes. Their photographer, Ross Halfen, when he first heard the title track, And Justice for All, he said, "Justice is this, justice is that, justice is 9 minutes long." But yeah, this song, you know, it's one I don't visit that often, but it's a really fucking good song. And regardless of the kind of the political affectation it might have, Don't Tread on Me or MAGA, blah, 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 who cares? It's a good song. Who gives a shit? Anyway, on to the next one, Through the Never. Great opening line. Almost have Pantera. Imagine Pantera covering this song. That'd be rad. Okay, they missed out on a great opportunity there. When it goes to that little bridge section where it goes, "Oh, through the never." They could have done, because it pans to the left and to the right. It bounces between. It could have gone, "Oh, through the never." It could have gone, for never, it could have gone, "Never." Because it's all one syllables until never. That would have been great. I don't know how available that was in 1991 when this record was made. But that would have been fucking great. Software Failure ever does something like that, if Software Failure ever does a cover of Through the Never, we're doing that. But yeah, this song's great. I just recently kind of learned what it was about. And I know I haven't talked a ton about the lyrics for these songs, but that's just kind of how I listen to music. I don't listen to music and think about the lyrics that much. I listen to music and I pick up on the melody and stuff like that. And after like the fifth or sixth listen, then maybe I'll start being like, "Oh, this song's about this." I realize that this is about like just the vastness of the universe. And the Through the Never is like kind of the never is just the universe. And the first line is like, "Universe, much too big to see." It's just like, we don't know what's out there. But yeah, now on to arguably one of their biggest songs, Nothing Else Matters. Whoa, I never noticed that car part. Greatest fucking part. Yeah, yeah! Into the solo. I love that part. So fucking good. Another fade out. Nothing Else Matters. What is there to say? The first super soft Metallica song with really no heavy part besides the "yeah, yeah" into the solo. There isn't really much to say other than it's a great song. It definitely opened doors for them in the future for where they go on Load and Reload. And it's just overall a great song that can't really be faulted by anyone. Like, it's such a versatile song. It's like people use it at their weddings and like graduations and funerals, and like it's such a versatile song, but it's by the biggest heavy metal band of all time. It's like one of the biggest touring acts today. It's like, what? This super sweet love song is by one of the biggest heavy metal bands of all time. What the fuck? I can't imagine what, like, hardcore metal people, like, people who fucking loved And Justice for All and loved, like, the progressiveness of that and, like, got to this point on the album and heard that and was like, what in the fuck is this shit? But it opened doors for them. It, like, it allowed them to play in places that metal hadn't been yet because of this song, because it was so commercially successful. And it's like, it's not like Escape on Ride the Lightning, where they were forced to write it. It's like James wrote it. He didn't intend for it to be a Metallica thing, but he showed it to Lars, and Lars was like, yeah, let's do something with this. And it turned into being one of their biggest songs and a show and a song that they have to play every show, except on the M72 No Repeat Weekend. Coming to a city near you, maybe, who knows. But yeah, it's a great song. James's vocal sounds amazing. I didn't realize how prominent the orchestra was in the second half of the song. And then also, I didn't notice the little whip-ip, whip-ip from the guitar right before the yeah-yeah into the solo. For a long time, I thought this song was about Cliff. I thought the song was about Cliff passing away and not... Because the never cared for what they do, never cared for what they know. I always thought that was kind of like about the media, because I had heard somewhere that it was about Cliff, but James wrote it about his girlfriend. But yeah, for a long time I thought it was about Cliff, and that's what I told Jake, my friend Jacob, one time, and I was like, "This is about Cliff, their bass player who died," and he was like, "It sounds like someone died." That just stuck with me, and I was like, "That's funny." But yeah, it's not about Cliff, but could be if you want it to be. That's what James would say. Anyway, on to a very different song of Wolf and Man. Is it? No. I love that muted. That muted, like, shuffle almost. Oh boy, do I like that song. That might be one of my favorites on the record. I've started to really like that song recently. But my favorite version of that song is the one they did with on S&M. That one is great with the orchestra. I love it. Because you also get Jason's backing vocals on that. And it's great. And also in the middle section, he does a wolf howl. And it's just great. I love Jason. He's the reason I play bass. Yeah, this song is great. The opening riff is just really fucking cool. I learned how to play it. It's fucking rad. Here's a shitty version without my bass plugged in. Wait, I get something like that. Hold on, let me go to the tab website. Yeah, I was doing it right. Oh, there it is. Something along those lines, you get it. I like that riff. I like that riff, I like the song. And in the middle section, I always check the time when it's like, or not the middle section, in like the second verse or whatever. When it's like, it's later than you realize. I always check the time because one time I was listening to this song and I thought about it, I was like, I wonder what time it is. And it was like, 10:30 on a school night and I was still up and I was like, oh shit, I should go to bed. Because I was still like on my computer or something doing something. And I was like, oh shit, I have school tomorrow. I should probably go to bed. So every time now when that part comes on, I'm like, it might be right again. Now on to a groovy one, The God That Failed. Fucking cool riff. That song fucking kicks ass. That song kicks ass. I love that song so much. I learned how to play that a long time ago. I don't remember. There's video of it. I don't know if I'm going to put it in the podcast, but there's video of me playing it. This song is very, very good. I like this song a lot. They should play it live more. But, yeah, this song's very good. In the beginning, there's clicks of a shotgun.
Not fuck around.
And then there's also some weird shaker too that I noticed, or something that sounds like a shaker in like the first, around the first chorus or something like that in the beginning of the song. It feels weird. It just doesn't, not that the fact that there's a shaker, it just doesn't feel like it's in time. It just feels like it moves around weirdly. I don't know what it is, but it just felt weird. The chorus riff I really, really like in that song. I never really listened intently to the chorus riff, but the chorus riff is really good. I may have to learn how to play that after this is done. But yeah, and then also in the middle section in the space, I don't know how many people hear it, but it sounds like Jason goes, "Hey!" And that may have been during like one of the drum takes from one of the drum mics or something. Because they tracked Lars's drums live with the whole band. It could be taken from that. I don't know if it is Jason or not, but it sounds like Jason. And I didn't hear that for the longest time. And then one day, like a couple years ago, I was taking a shower and this song came on and I was just getting out of the shower right before that section, right before the pause, and I hear, "Hey!" And I was like, "What the fuck? I've never heard that before." And that's one of the beauties. I was listening to a podcast with Josh Homme and Bill Burr, and they were talking about this. You can listen to a song 50 times, but it's on like the 51st listen. Then you hear something that you didn't hear before. And it's awesome when you hear something you didn't notice. Like today, with the, when I was listening to this, hearing the shaker for the first time, or hearing the little in Nothing Else Matters. Just hearing shit I never heard before in these songs is rad. And I think that's going to be a really fun part of this podcast. Anyway, this song's good. On to the song that's the kind of the reason I play bass. I love this solo. Sounds very vocally or some shit like that. Synthy. That's what I'm thinking. It sounds very synthy. I might change my statement on saying Sabba True might be my favorite on the record. It's this song for sure. It's definitely Misery. After that listen, it's like, fuck, this song's so good. And it's kind of the reason I play bass a little bit, because it features Jason. In a way, he's not really featured in any other song that much, playing one of his own riffs, because he wrote that intro bass part. And it was something I really wanted to learn, and I tried learning it, and I was just like, this is hard. But now I'm able to play it. Let me show it. Shit, fuck. It's hard to play this in this chair. But yeah, at first, I tried learning that like a couple months after I started learning bass, but the switches were too hard, and I was like, this is hard to play. And I was like, oh, once I learn how to play that, I'll be a pretty decent bass player. And then I tried learning Anesthesia, the bass solo on Kill 'Em All, the first Metallica record. And I was like, fuck, if I can learn how to play that, I'm going to be a really good bass player. And watch this. I have to play with a pick, though. I'm not going to as good as Cliff. Thank you. And after that, I get a little lost. But see, I was able to play the opening of it. And I said after that, once I learn how to play that, I'll be a really good bass player. But I lied. But no, it's cool once I hit those milestones. Because it was on stream when I learned that I had the ability to play Anesthesia. I was watching some Metallica stuff on stream. And I was like, let me try it. And I pulled up the tab and I was looking at it and I tried it. I was like, shit, this might be possible. And then I tried to learn, and then I learned it and I was like, whoa. And then I thought about like back 2 years ago when I learned how to play bass. I said that if I'm able to learn this, I'm a good bass player. What the fuck? Wild. But yeah, and then with Misery, being able to play that. Is just awesome because Jason is the reason I play bass and play with a pick and everything. I don't know, it's just, this song kind of very much musically influenced me. Software Failure, we played an EP release show, just a small show for friends at Bobby's girlfriend's house. And I had a bass solo during it. I played the intro to Misery during it. Just kind of, I was like, I kind of want to do that, just kind of as a homage to Jason, and being like, this is the reason I play bass. That's all. It's just very kind of a cool full circle thing with this song a little bit. But yeah, now on to the final song, The Struggle Within, a short thrashy guy. Wow. Struggle Within. The album for me could have ended with Misery. Struggle With It, it's just a forgettable song. It's not that I don't like it. I like all the songs on this record. They're all very good. But Struggle With It, I just forget about it all the time. And I listen to it, I'm like, oh yeah, I forget about this song. This song's good, but I forget about it all the time. And Metallica evidently forgot about it because they didn't play it till the 2012 Black Album tour I was talking about earlier. It's good, don't get me wrong. It's like, yeah, in on a thrasher, but Misery would have been a great closer as well. You don't always need 12 songs, Metallica. You've done 8-song albums before. Last one you did before the Black Album was fucking 9 songs. Don't need 12. 11's fine. 11's more than enough. You already got through all the hits with 11. I don't know. I'm not shitting on Struggle Within. It's just, it feels a little silly. I don't know. It almost feels like it's lacking something. It almost feels like it was written just to be like, hey, here's song number 12. I don't know. It just feels a little one-dimensional to me. I don't know. Now I'm going to get fucking flamed in the comments. Fuck what? That's a great song. It was my favorite one. It was my wedding song. Really, of all songs on the Black Album, Struggle Within was your wedding song? Overall, I give this song this album a very strong 9. Very strong 9. Now, that's coming from someone who is obsessed with Metallica. Metallica nerd, as Bobby likes to say. Without this album, because this was the first Metallica album I sunk my teeth into when I got into Metallica, just because arguably it's the most accessible to someone coming in. But yeah, without Metallica and kind of more specifically the Black Album, there probably would be no Software Failure. There would be no musical spark in me, because the way it all kind of started was, I probably should have talked about this after Nothing Else Matters, but the way I kind of started wanting to play music is by listening to Metallica, because the songs had so many gaps where there wasn't singing. It made me appreciate musicianship, and it kind of got me wanting to play guitar. But then I started looking at guitar tabs and stuff like that, and it's like, oh, there's a lot of chords you have to play. That's a lot to remember. And then I started looking at bass tabs, and I saw that it was all like single note stuff, just basically playing the root of whatever chord the guitar player is playing. And it's like, that sounds a lot easier. Let's do that. And then here I am. But the thing that made me pull the trigger on buying a bass back in, I guess, May of 2020, I was at Bobby's house, and he had a acoustic guitar just sitting around. And I grabbed it, and he was like, oh, you can practice guitar, because he knew I kind of wanted to learn to play bass. And I pulled up tab, because I already knew how to read tab, because I had a little toy guitar I would practice on. And I pulled up tab for Nothing Else Matters, and I learned the opening riff, and I was like, fuck, that's really cool. I'm reproducing the thing James did on the record with my hands. And it just got me buzzing, and I was like, fuck, I need to buy a bass. Because I knew I didn't want to learn guitar, just because it was like, that's going to be too hard. Let's play bass, because I already was able to kind of learn bass parts. So I bought this bad boy. This shitty Ibanez micro something or another. It's a short scale. But yeah, it doesn't sound great. This is tuned a half step lower, but it does not sound good. It just sounds so dead. Granted, these are like probably 6 month old strings on it. Anyway, Metallica's The Black Album. Good record. I'd suggest listening to it. Now, on to the final part of the podcast, where I look at a piece of gear, because the way I came up with the name for the podcast, I was watching a video about kind of the history of Blink-182. It was by a guy called the Punk Rock MBA. MBA, as in Michael. As in Metallica. But no, I was watching that, and he was like, we all had our crate combos and metal zones, so I stole that for the podcast. Because I was like, that's a fucking great name for like a gear podcast. And I was like, but I don't really know that much about gear. And I was like, well, I can just review records instead and then look at a goofy piece of gear. So that's what we're doing. I'm going to look at a piece of interesting gear that I found on Reddit. Piece of gear we're looking at is a travel guitar with a built-in amp. It's actually pretty fucking cool. It looks like it's all like just like a very electronic thing. Like this part is like made the neck is like this middle section, kind of like an original Les Paul. I'll put a picture on screen for the video watchers. Yeah, it looks like that. But this inside part must be electronic, because there's this screen here, and this, like, the speaker must be here, but that wouldn't make sense, because it'd be rather than on your leg. I don't know. I don't know how it works, but it looked cool, so I decided to show it for this first episode, because I figured I may as well show some sort of guitar thing, since it was Metallica. So, yeah, that's the first piece of gear on crate combos and metal zones. So, yeah. That's it for this first episode. It was probably pretty rough, but as time goes on, I'll get better. So, like I said at the top of this, episodes probably won't be weekly. They'll most likely be every other week once this kind of gets going. This is kind of a pilot episode. A little bit, just kind of testing the water, seeing how it does. And then if people like it, I'll continue doing it, just because it's an easier way of doing content with doing software failure and having work and everything. But it's just kind of hard having two creative things going on with the band and YouTube and putting more time into one, and then also having work and everything. it's hard to kind of split your creative energy between two when you want to put full into one. So that's partially why I decided to start this podcast, but also because I thought it would be fun to do. So yeah, that's it for this. I hope you enjoyed. Let me know ways I can improve in the comments. And this is also on streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts, Deezer. I don't know if it's on Deezer, but Software Failure is on Deezer. So make a Deezer account and Deez us. I don't know. Jesus. But yeah, anyway, that's that. Make sure to listen to Software Failure, wherever you get music. Deezer. I don't know. But yeah, make sure to listen to my band, Software Failure, please. It would mean a lot. Anyway, that's it. Okay. Fuck off.